Welcome back to the Private Label Show, guys. It's June 24th, 2019. I'm sitting here with a special guest, Mr. Willie Davis.
That's you.
Yes, sir. Mr. Willie Davis is running for city council. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yes, sir. Why don't you tell the people a little bit more about, you know, what it is that you do and how you kind of got started.
All right. Thank you. First of all, let me thank you, Brother DeAndre, for inviting me to share with you today and to all of your viewers and listeners. I am a pastor. I'm a minister. Okay. I've been pastoring for 33 years. Oh, wow. And I pastor the Palm Church here in Houston.
Okay.
And I've been part of the Houston city process pretty much all my life. I was born and raised here in Houston, and only had one short tenure away from Houston, and that was, of course, when I served in Chicago, Illinois, for 3.5 years.
Okay.
But I'm running for city council at large, position number 2.
Mm-hmm.
And I ran in 2015, and I almost beat the incumbent. Only by a few votes, he beat me.
Okay.
And I was the last candidate to get in the race, and ended up in the runoff with the incumbent. So this time I've got a lot more time. But yeah, I'm running for city council at large, position 2, because I want to make a difference in the city of Houston. And I have some ideas and methods by which it ought to happen, and which my the incumbent, the person that's holding that office, has been there 6 years.
Oh, wow.
And has pretty much done nothing, because he serves as an at-large, which means the whole city can vote for him, okay?
Mm.
So if the whole city votes for you, then you ought to serve the whole city, you know?
Okay.
And that's one of
the reasons. He doesn't serve the whole city?
He doesn't. Right now, in his 6 years as at-large position 2, he hasn't really focused on any areas of the city. Now, the at-large position is different than a district council. You know, we have district councilmen, and the city government of Houston, there are 11 districts, A through K, and then you have 5 at-large seats, what we call councilmen at-large.
Okay.
Now, which means the district council person, it be male or female, the district council person takes care of that district, you know, but the at-large council member is kind of like a second person. That if you couldn't get to your district council person, you say, okay, I'm going to call the at-large council and see if I can get something done, like my street, or, you know, or I have a busted pipe, you know, whatever, in the city and it's flooding. So the at-large seat, when they set up the government of Houston, they gave us 11 district seats and 5 at-large seats. So when you're at-large, you don't control the district seat where the councilman sits, but you also help that council member, and you assist the members of the city no matter what.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And how long can you be in that position once you get elected?
Once I'm elected, your first term is 4 years.
4 years, okay.
And then if you win the second round, you get another 4 years.
Okay.
And that's it. You only can run 2 times 4 years, which is a total of 8 years.
So it's the same as like the president.
Absolutely.
Same thing.
Same thing, right. Okay. It's a 4-year term. Now, it used to be, prior to 2015, it was 3 2-year terms.
Okay.
Yeah, you would run every 2 years,
okay,
but only do it 3 times, which is a total of 6 years. So they changed that. They put it on the ballot, and the people voted. And so the voting came out to now where it is, it's 2 4-year terms, which turns out to be 8 years, if you win the second round.
Okay. And you are born and raised in Houston?
Born and raised. Third Ward, Texas.
Yes, sir. I definitely Third know Ward, about Texas. That. So what kind of made you want to start running and to really realize, you know, your purpose of what you wanted to do?
Now, DeAndre, that is an excellent question. Because for me as a pastor, I've been doing it for 33 years. I tell you what made me really, really want to run for office. Number one, I love my city. I love Houston.
Same.
I love Houston. And that's why I commend you as a young man that because I want to make Houston better for you. You're a millennial. You're a smart, intelligent young man, and we have smart, intelligent young women. Houston is a multicultural city, and
I just wanted to let you know I'm on the other end of
the world.
I'll be down there for probably an hour. Thank you.
I love my city, and I want Houston to be a great city, and particularly for you as a millennial. I don't want to see our city go in a direction to where it basically divides. Those 3.5 years I was in Chicago, and many people may not know this, but Houston is number 4 right now as the most populated city in America. We're number 4. But actually, when the next census come out in 2020, we're going to be number 3.
So we've grown even larger.
We've grown even larger. You with me? So as anything, the bigger things get,
the more out of hand it can
get. Absolutely. You got it. See, then more is going to be out of hand. And then secondly, the larger a city gets, the more need there is to do in the city. There's a greater need to get it done. So by virtue of the city, we want to have an opportunity to expand it but not be segregated. Now, Chicago is number 3 city in America.
Okay.
And right now, Chicago is probably the most segregated city in the country by ethnicity. Okay? We don't want to see Houston turn that way.
Exactly.
So my heart for my city was I want to see it continue to be an integrated city, but we want it to be integrated not only by ethnicity, but by economics.
Okay.
You follow me? So to make sure that as a city grows and it prospers, as Houston is, that we grow and we prosper economically as well as by ethnicity. So I have this passion. I don't want to see Houston going in the wrong direction. And right now it is, which the theme of my candidacy is let's keep Houston safe.
Okay.
Because think about it. If the city is not safe, nobody can make any money. And then if the city is not safe, then you're going to have people kind of alienating and separating themselves by communities. Right now, Houston is a very integrated city.
Yes.
You can live anywhere you want to live. You understand? Mm-hmm. And me and people cross ethnicities live together and everything. But if our city gets too involved in criminal activity and it begins to grow as it is now, we've got a problem.
Sort of like how Chicago
absolutely
is. Definitely. Absolutely. I think due to the areas more so of like gentrification, you can kind of see how everything is going in Houston, and it is a very diverse city. Everybody is really, you know, together, but I can't kind of see how that can become a problem and kind of scare money away from certain areas.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And if you don't get a handle on that, then you stand the risk of losing. And even now, our city, we have some gentrification problems even now that need to be solved. But we need to have leadership in our city council and mayor that can run the city equally across all communities. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. We need to be equal in terms of how we address that economic threshold, that we don't leave gaps in it. And one community is dry bone dry, and the other side of the town is flourishing and everything. So we know that happens a lot in our community when it comes to stores, food stores, grocery stores. You know, the big chain grocery stores are reluctant about coming into certain areas of the city due to what? Crime. You know, well, you know, they argue, well, is the people going to buy the product and that type of thing. So we have to do away with that mindset and make sure that we have equal leadership that addresses all of it, you know, and not have one part of the area looking prosperous. And, you know, and then, of course, the other side of town in many communities, they have to drive over into another community just to buy something. When, you know, equalness in business should not discriminate. You know, if there's an HEB on the southwest side, ought to be an HEB in the southeast side,
exactly,
and the northeast side, and the, you know, vice versa. So those are the type of things that worry me.
Well, do you, in that case, do you kind of agree with the gentrification?
I think gentrification is twofold. I think gentrification is good, and I think gentrification can be bad.
Exactly.
So the manner, the way you handle it, and the manner by the way you handle it is how you balance gentrification. Because sometimes in gentrification, you need to move some bad stuff out of the community.
My,
you follow?
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't want it, plight need to be gone. Anything that's plight, you know, some boarded up buildings and
exactly,
boarded up business places, that's blight. That doesn't give beautification.
Doesn't bring any value to the, well, my whole question is, I agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, how do you kind of keep a balance of, and I try to explain to my people,
sure,
African-Americans, especially with me being in real estate.
Absolutely.
It's kind of like they can see it one-sided.
Right.
With me being in real estate, it's almost like I look at it as they're trying to make this area nice,
mm-hmm,
to make the city, you know, more right, feasible for people to come in and want to come and view.
Absolutely.
And like almost like a tourist attraction.
Absolutely.
So it's like, how do you do that, but then at the same time not offend African-Americans by making them feel like they're being pushed out?
Absolutely. Let me tell you how you do it. Number one, it's like this. Everybody in our city is not all on the same economic eco-value system. I may be working on a job where I'm working, making a middle income wage. Someone may be in the community that makes less than I may, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to separate myself from that person just because they make less money. And I don't want to profile that person just because he or she makes less money, that I want them gone. I want them out of my community. That is the mindset oftentimes with some people.
Oh,
you know what
mm-hmm
I'm saying? So what do? You make affordable living available to everybody. If it's a single member family, you got a home, you got a nice home, backyard, front yard, whatever. We know that's going to require a certain income level, right?
Exactly.
Now, what about multifamily? Multifamily, when you got apartments, townhomes, condo, that type of thing. So you want to make it affordable. And now the way you do to balance that, you want to keep the community beautified. But the main thing is you want to keep the community safe. See, everything goes back to safety, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So if it's safe, then everybody can live, you know, cohabitably together and don't feel like they've been pushed out.
Mm-hmm.
If it's safety in that community, what would generally end up happening, if it's safety in that community, that the people, by and large, will, most times, they will feel a little bit more, especially businesses, to come into that community
mm-hmm
and not to stay out, you see? So gentrification can be handled, and you are absolutely correct. You're a realtor. You understand that. And so, but in order to personify the fact that gentrification is not bad, you know, is that you make it, you know, affordable for everybody. Everybody gets a little of everything in that community. And like I say, gentrification has to be looked at from both sides.
Exactly.
But if you make it unaffordable for me, then you actually gentrifying me out.
Literally.
Literally.
So it's more so it's like, how do you do that? Because once they build these three-story luxury townhomes, it kind of makes everything around it, it makes that value go up. Because they're so expensive now, it's like, okay, this house on this side and this side, it might have been $150 20
mm-hmm
years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's worth $300 because
mm-hmm
you have $1 million townhome right in the middle of it.
Absolutely.
So it's like, how do you kind of still keep that affordable, but at the same time you have this luxury expensive property?
Well, from my mindset, it would be, I go back to what I said earlier. You build housing, affordable housing, and you strategically place it within the community that, you know, it doesn't affect the other side. Most of our city government with multi-family housing, the city generally give them tax breaks. You know, they give them, say, okay, if you want to build a multi-housing facility in this community, we'll give you a tax break by the virtue of the fact that you keep that salary at a minimum rate. We also have HUD, the federal government HUD housing. Mm. HUD comes in and HUD can work out with contractors and people to say, listen, you can build this housing under the HUD provisions by the law of HUD. And again, that housing can be affordable for people to live. And so it doesn't affect the interest rate or the equity value of other people with homing. It doesn't. If you build it right and you put it in the right place, it doesn't affect the property value of that community that's associated with it. The generally thing that most time what devaluates property is, you know, the way the community looks, blighted buildings, crime going up, because what forces that? Because listen, I grew up in a community where it was low income. Mm-hmm. Now today, that community that was low income doing when I was growing up, now it's middle
exactly.
income. Mm-hmm. So what happened? Nothing changed about the community other than the fact that what happened? Many of the low income housing that was provided for those people, they pushed those people out. The owners of the houses came in and tore it down and sold it to a developer.
Yep.
The developer came in
and built on it
and put a value on it.
Mm-hmm.
But that landlord that had it, all he or she had to do was to say, hey, you know, I'm going to upgrade what I have and other developers going to move in, because now we see some community as a mixture. That's a mixture.
I see it all the time now.
Yeah. Low income and middle income people.
That's what it is right now.
Right now. Mm-hmm. Yes. And even when I was in Chicago, I experienced the same thing. The historical black community in Chicago was called Bronzeville. And right now, developers started moving in. And the moat, and noted, and I was doing my tenure in Chicago, the housing buildings, which was considered like project housing and whatever, mm-hmm. instead of them renovating them and making them better, they just tore them down. Immediately tore them down, which naturally moved those people further out to cheaper housing because they wanted that particular area. Mm-hmm. When they could have renovated the area, put some more affordable housing in there with some of the others and protected everybody. So
it's more so of like mixing it.
Mixing it.
Okay, and how do you go about keeping that safe?
Well, I think one of the things, safety, in my opinion, is the paramount of what makes a big city like Houston function. It's like New York. It's like L.A. What makes it function is safety. And the only way you're going to get safety, you have to have some very good leadership. And I'm talking from the top down. The mayor, the chief of police, and everybody associated with it, the county law enforcement, everybody has to have a plan. And what makes it safe is you have to have community involvement. So you can't have a law enforcement that's not community involved. If the community is involved with law enforcement and law enforcement involved with community, you can make a community safe. But if you have no communication at all, one of the great things that we did in Houston years ago under Mayor Lee P. Brown, who was the first Black American mayor in Houston history, what made Lee P. Brown so successful during his mayoral term as mayor was the fact that he was a PhD in law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of the first people to get a PhD in law enforcement. He served as chief of police for major cities. He served in San Francisco, served in Houston, served in Atlanta, and served in New York. And he was drug czar. He was actually drug czar. So what I'm saying is he brought in what was called community policing.
Okay.
He brought in what was called community policing. And so when he did that, it helped the community because then he put small substations in areas of the city. You follow me? And so if something was going down, a person didn't have to drive all the way down to the police headquarters or jump on the phone. They got them right there.
So it's more so of putting them in communities to where more like you're able to get to them more easily.
Absolutely.
They're more focused on a section versus just one office trying to attack the whole entire city,
That's right. They
can't really focus on the details.
That's right.
In one area.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. And look what that does. Not only does it protect the citizen, but it protects the business. You know, if I've got a clothing store or coffee shop or donut shop or, you know, just alteration or suit selling stuff, it doesn't matter what I have. But if I know just a few blocks up, I have a police.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, substation there. So the criminal's going to think twice because
exactly.
Now they're thinking, if I make a act of commit a crime, I got to have time to get away.
Because the police station right there.
It's right there. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a mindset. And then I also think what helps that is we have to educate the community to where if you see something, say something. Because, you know, a long time in many of our communities with high crime, the problem that they had was when something went down in a community, whether it was a robbery, a break-in, or even a murder, they come in and say, well, did you see anything? I didn't see nothing. People just take the attitude, I don't want to say nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want anybody coming back. But what you're doing is you're hurting yourself because you may be the next victim.
Exactly. And I see, with older women of the generation, like grandmothers and stuff of that nature, they speak out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they always speak out and say what they saw, and that's never a problem with them. So I guess it's more so of like, you know, my generation and
yes.
In between coming out to speak to keep everybody safe around.
Yes, yes. And that's why I say that what we generally have is we have a issue of whether or not we can work together in our communities. Because like I say, the main thing about Houston is the multi-ethnicity. And if you look at New York, if you look at places like Chicago and L.A., if we don't solve that ethnicity problem as a large city, then in the long run, we're going to have a problem. We're going to be ending up looking like a Chicago where you got 600 homicides in a year. That is totally
mm-hmm.
unacceptable, man. It's totally. You get women shot, men shot, children being shot. I mean, you know.
So how do you think that's happening when it seems like there's many cops in that area? How do you think it's still happening when it's like these cops know, and then it seems like it's a lot of them? How is it still happening out in the open like this?
Open like that.
Yeah.
Well, one of the reasons, I think the reason why it's still happening is because of the fact that this is grown. This ain't something that just happened yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
This is systemic, and it's been going on for years, and it has become a cancer. And now the churches that are viable in the community is disconnected from the community. The schools are disconnected. In Chicago, the reason why I got that way, my brother DeAndre, is this. Gangs start trying to initiate kids into them in elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that.
As that
seven,
young.
Eight, mm-hmm. nine-year-old kids. They're trying to get them in the gangs at that early of an age, which now tells you that the community has no connection. No connection. The mothers, the fathers, and everybody. And so what happens systemically, Houston is right at 3 million people. We've surpassed Chicago.
Mm.
You know how many police officers we have? 5,000. You know what I mean? In Chicago, got
way more.
13,000.
And that's why I'm asking, how is that happening if we have way less and doing less, you know, crime?
And that's because we avoided being segregated. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
And it goes back to the economics. Because if you segregate us, then we like it one little area. That's our area.
Mm-hmm.
And that's our turf. We don't ever cross and go over to the other side. And that's why I said it's important that we keep our city not only bragging on the multiple ethnicity, but we need to brag on how integrated we are. And the only way to integrate the city to avoid that, we have to have a balance of economic, you understand, togetherness. You can't put me out of community because I don't make the same amount of money you have. You see, and then we guess what? Same thing with our school. You follow me? If my school is less productive than the school on the west side, then guess what? I'm going to breathe a mindset, you see. Yeah.
And I think, me personally, I feel like the crime and the gang activity, I think all of that stems from these people are put in a situation to where it's almost like survival mode. And once you get in survival mode, I don't think they're really too concerned about the next person next to them.
Absolutely.
Because they're just trying to survive and eat, which then put the crime rate and everything at a high, you know, risk because they're not thinking.
That's right.
These people aren't living with a purpose.
That's right.
They're just focused on eating and taking care of their kids or whatever they have to do to survive themselves. It's
absolutely
not a weed community type thing.
You are absolutely correct. You just nailed it. And this is, and you know, just what you just said is, and you could actually apply that to almost every major city in America where there's a high number of Black, whether it's Memphis, Tennessee, a lot of people don't know, but cities like Memphis, Nashville, Atlanta, Detroit, you know, Chicago, Houston, you know, LA, all of these different cities, it's a systemic issue. And you're right. But the way we have to do it, we have to work hard at keeping everything balanced. And as I say, most of the time, I know what it takes. I pastored in it. I lived in it. I lived on the South Side of Chicago, right where I pastored. I lived on the South Side. So it wasn't something unfamiliar to me. So my almost 4 years in that city, I learned the politics. I looked at.
You was a part of the culture.
I was a part of that culture. And so I know. So now that I'm back home in Houston, I'm saying, wait a minute. We need to look at this right here real seriously. Because what a lot of us do, we'll ignore it. And then we wait till it starts to grow and get out of control. Now we want
to
put.
Now you want to try to grab it. It's too late.
It's too late.
Yeah.
As I often say, we try to put Band-Aids on shotgun wounds. And you can't put a Band-Aid on a shotgun wound because it's too late. It doesn't fix it.
You got to get it before it even becomes a problem.
Absolutely.
Yes, sir. Well, where can everybody go vote for you and what day?
Well, early voting starts in October.
Okay.
And I don't know exactly when that date will, but it'll be publicized. But certainly I hope and pray that everybody vote for me, Reverend Willie Davis, in October. And then the general election is November the 5th. It's a Tuesday, first Tuesday in November.
Okay.
And that's going to be the general election. And I'm hoping that everybody get out and understand, you know, and like I say, I'm the guy that I'm running against, David Robinson. He's most people don't even know who he is because he doesn't show up. And but I would hope that they look for Willie Davis.
Okay,
look for me on that, and I want to serve this city because I love it.
Well, I mean, I do everything in my power to continue to push you and your message because I stand behind it and your vision. I'm trying to make changes myself for the community and lead by example. So whatever I can attach myself with to bring value, I'm all the way in.
Well, I want to say this to you, DeAndre. I want to thank you for taking the time to listen to me and offer because you represent what I want to see be productive. You know, I'm in the senior age area now. You a young man, millennial age. You have great ideals. You have great energy. You have a great vision. And that's what I need to do to make it easier for you and prosperous for you.
Yes, sir. Well, I appreciate it, Tom, so much.
You're welcome.
And thank you guys for tuning in, and we'll be back next time.